versus Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz in the controls. How do?
Oh, I do well. How are you?
Oh, very good, thank you.
Excellent. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. You can also listen to us anytime by accessing Open Sources on the CFRU archive page. Today, we will dedicate the hour to our very special guest, Cam Guthrie, the mayor of Guelph. Mayor Guthrie was elected last fall's municipal election, and he enjoyed a fairly decisive victory in a competitive and sometimes controversial race. But since... Oh, I can hear myself now.
Hey, I can hear myself.
Anyway, in case you missed it, Mayor Guthrie is our guest. And since taking office in December, Mayor Guthrie has put away a budget for the fiscal year, worked with the new council to set the agenda for the term, and has been doing the usual mayor-y things, like making speeches and breaking ground and that kind of thing. And so he's going to do another mayor-y thing today and talk to the local press about what's going on at City Hall and talk shop and politics. So, Mayor Guthrie, thank you for joining us today.
And thank you very much for having me.
We're glad to have you.
Yeah, really happy to be here.
And just a reminder that later in the show we will be asking your questions of the mayor, and you can still get in touch with us at my Twitter handle, at Adam A. Donaldson, or Scotty's Twitter handle, at Scotty Hertz. And you can use the hashtag AskMayorCam and just fire that off, and we will see if we can squeeze in your question at the end of the show. But to begin with, we have questions of our own, don't we, Scotty?
Yes, we do, and I'll start with this one. Mayor Guthrie, your slogan when you ran was a better Guelph. So this is sort of a wide-open one, but... You've been in, well, there was the famous 100 days article, but mm-hmm. it's well over 100 days now. How do you feel so far? Like, how has Guelph been in terms of it being better?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And again, thanks for having me here. You guys gave out your Twitter handle, so I'm going to give out mine right now.
Please.
So, at Cam Guthrie. So there you go. And now I will answer your question. So I actually think things are getting better. And that's not just because I'm the mayor and I'm saying it. I'm hearing it from our staff. I'm hearing it from different stakeholders in the city. And I see it myself in the boardrooms. I see it in the hallways. I see it even around the council chambers. Things are getting better. And you know, this is it's a large ship to turn around. So I think, you know, nothing's going to be solved in, as you alluded to, 100 days, or I think it's been 120 or 130 days now.
But who's counting?
Yeah, that's right. But it's incremental, and it is happening. And so I've been pleased both hearing from internal people saying that things are getting better and from external people as well.
Mm-hmm. I'll play off Scotty's question and that article in the Mercury. One of the things you mentioned is that you realized you fairly early on that you didn't quite have as much power as you thought, that the title of mayor doesn't grant you a lot of, I don't know, a little bit of extra power. And you said there was a kind of a realization that you were the one vote out of 13 as opposed to perhaps having a bit more political capital than the term mayor might imply. When did that happen?
Well, I knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I think what was meant by that was I think the community thought that I had the more clout or I had more power. And that's just not the way the government works. It's important, I think, to set and to tell the public what the expectations are up front. And in a way, that quote of mine in the article is basically saying, like, hey, I can't wave a magic wand and just stop or start something. There's a process, and mm-hmm. the process is there on purpose. And you're right, though, when it comes to voting, I am only one vote. And there's 13 councillors, 12 councillors and myself. I'm still a councillor. I'm just the head of council that are trying to work together for the betterment of the community and moving forward. That's just the way it works. And you know, in the states, mayors have, you know, it's called veto power. So in the states, a lot of mayors can have so a council might pass something and it goes to the mayor and the mayor says no. That doesn't happen here. We have to work together for the betterment of the community, no matter how a vote comes down, whether I voted for or against something. So.
Have you wished at all so far that you had veto power? Because I know there's been some talk. I suppose it would be nice, right? But there are times. But yes, okay, we'll leave it at that. I was reading something interesting. I think it was in the Mercury about the shared agenda workshop, sounds like an interesting process. I wasn't really aware of it. Maybe it's something that's gone on for a long time. Is that something new or something that's done every year? Because it sounded like it's the kind of thing where you guys all get together regardless of where you sit on the spectrum to kind of talk turkey about all the issues in the city.
Yeah, so good segue from Adam's question because it talks about, you know, it's just not – although I campaigned on, you know, my agenda, right. It is not my agenda. It is 12 other people that I have to work with, and they all got elected from their communities that they represent. And so that shared agenda is something that does happen usually within the first few months, 6 to 7 months after an election. And I've been talking to a lot of my counterparts, like other mayors in other cities, and they're all going through the exact same thing. Some of them call it a shared agenda. Some of them call them a strategic plan for the term. Mm-hmm. But it's basically what do we want to try to accomplish as a team, as the 13 of us, along with staff, to do what we want to do, you know, based on what we heard at the doors during the election, what our own feelings are, what staff want to tell us about that are already in the works. So some of the new counselors need to be aware of things that are already coming about, right. And that we want to accomplish all those things for the term. And so that's what's called the shared agenda. And we just passed the shared agenda, what's called in principle, on Monday night. And now each individual committee will now kind of, you know, dive down a bit deeper into the things that affect their committee and prioritize those issues. And then that will set it in stone after that for the shared agenda moving forward.
And it sounds simple, right? But, you know, if we're to think of this in sort of the terms of political parties or in the federal and the provincial level, you know, just talking about a couple of parties, a couple of people who are kind of representing voting blocks trying to work together, there are 13 people with very specific ideas and very specific agendas. And sometimes you have ward mates who don't necessarily see eye to eye on every issue as well.
Yeah, I mean that is true. But you know what? From what I've seen so far, we are getting along very, very well, and it's been really good. And there's a lot more that we have in common than not. If you want to talk about that voting block issue, mm-hmm. It's not creeping up as much as people think or the media may play out to be. We are getting along really well, and it's been a great process so far. And you know, but at the end of the day, it is called a shared agenda for a reason. It's not my agenda. It's not, you know, the Ward 6 counselor's agenda or Ward 1. It is a shared agenda, and that, you know what, I think the community will appreciate that.
What's some of the surprising things you've learned about your colleagues? Maybe not just politically, but in terms of getting to know them personally too.
Secrets of city council. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we want dirt.
Yeah. This is where I wish I did have the questions in advance. I think one of the things is I'm going to allude to the last question I just answered. Mm-hmm. There just seems to be more common ground than I think I thought, mm-hmm. or maybe even the public would have thought as well. You know, the election I don't think helped. Separating factions and that I just don't really see that too much, and what I see is 13 people that are willing to work really hard for the city of Guelph together, and again I think that's what the community wants. I think I've seen a sort of a renewed openness, especially during the budget process. Counselors willing to speak to other counselors in advance to let them know where they were thinking of landing on a motion or an idea or an amendment on a certain topic, so that everyone sort of knew in advance instead of these surprises. Mm. And that happened quite a bit in the last term of council. So there seems to be this openness and transparency between counselors so far that I'm really appreciating. And so that would be one thing that I'm noticing that is, no matter who it is happening across all 13 of us, and that's a good thing.
Part of that might be, too, though, that this is a pretty big freshman class as opposed to the previous council, too. There's more than half the council is rookies, for lack of a better term.
They are. However, we have, Counselor Downer, we have Counselor Billings, we have Counselor Salisbury that are all back after one or two terms away, mm-hmm. right? And so it's kind of interesting to get some they have some corporate history that they can bring to the table for the brand new rookies, or they can fill in some blanks and say, well, hey, we tried that several years ago. I wouldn't go there, you know? And that's good. So that's a really nice mix to have.
Yeah.
I don't know what people's favorite colors are, or things like that. But what I am seeing is a bunch of people that care about the city, and it's nice to it's been a nice new tone for council since we've been elected.
Well, let's get into some issues, because I think people are interested. First of all, I mean, it is budget week. That we had the double budget, and we were talking about the Ontario budget because I dropped literally right before the show. Mm-hmm. But is there anything you've seen in either the federal budget or the what little you've seen in the provincial budget check in your phone before the show that you think is encouraging for Guelph, anything specifically?
Well, I did do a blog yesterday about what I kind of saw from the federal budget, and through the lens of not only myself, but through, every municipality is part of different organizations. So we have Federation of Canadian Municipalities, FCM. We have Association mm-hmm. of Municipalities of Ontario, AMO. So those kind of bodies that we're a part of, they have a good lens on that too. And so I talked about the federal budget yesterday. Overall, I think it's pretty positive, actually. What I like, two things, if I could talk about the federal one, would be mm-hmm. Nice to see the word surplus in a budget. They've gone from, I think, $55 billion at the height of the recession in deficit down to a projected $1 billion surplus. Yay. So that's good. Mm-hmm. And the second part was a new dedicated funding for transit. I think it's $750 million. I think this year or next year starting, and then it will be $1 billion after that rolling out. That's a good thing. There's going to be the talking heads on both sides that say, well, it should be more. Well, of course, it should always be more. but I think those two things popped out to me on the federal. On the Ontario side, you're right. I just looked at my phone before, the music started here for the station. But you know what? I do appreciate the commitment to transit again. So there's that bleed over from the federal and the provincial about transit. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen Wynne has committed to what's called the Big Move, which is to help Ontario get moving in regards to different types of transit issues. And of course, Guelph is wanting to do the all day two-way go, that's a 10-year plan, and so we're looking for that to obviously come about in the next few years. And so I have to dive down a bit more into the provincial one, I think the transit issue from province, transit issue from the feds, it's very good to have all levels of government speaking right. sort of similar language, that obviously transit's a big issue.
So sticking with transit, in terms of that money, and maybe it isn't decided yet, is it distributed in terms of, okay, we have a city, Guelph, 100,000, 110,000, you get X amount, or is it, does the city apply for it in terms of demand, like, man, our buses are 40 years old, or is it a mixture of both? I've never really understood, because it's like, yay, transit money, but who, obviously Toronto will get a serious amount of that. But in terms of smaller centers like us, how is that distributed?
Again, my limited reading from the federal part.
Yeah.
I believe
like it doesn't say in the budget, Guelph gets X, right?
It's I believe if I'm saying this correctly, in the federal part, it had to have business cases and it had to have private sector part of that.
Right.
That's all I really know about the federal part. On the provincial part, though, I mean, look, Waterloo, Kitchener, Brampton, and Guelph have been lobbying very well with a solid business case that I've been supportive of from day one about all day to Waco. And I have met with the Minister of Transportation about 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was very positive about that. And I just met with the Premier a couple of days ago. She was very positive about that. This is a commitment, though, that is a 10-year commitment. So you might not see the word Guelph in the provincial budget today. But I do feel very good about our chances of getting that for the region.
Isn't there on the books two more GO trains coming next year, though?
Yes, I'm sorry. I believe so. You know what? I don't want to totally commit to that because I haven't – until I'm the type of guy that until I see it
– Yeah.
Well, it's in my hands.
Yeah. That's just how I roll a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
I was the same way when they brought the GO trains back. It's like I'll believe it when I'm standing on a GO train.
Yeah, there you go.
I wanted to mention or get you to talk about specifically Guelph Transit because there was the big rollout of the new routes and the new schedule a couple of weeks ago for public feedback. And when I was talking to the members of Transit, they were looking at a very ambitious schedule in terms of getting that going. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you've recapped pretty well there, Adam. I would say that there is a renewed focus on fixing this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everyone's on the same page. It needs to be fixed. So we know that. Okay, so let's move forward. How do we fix it? And so Transit has been coming forward with these proposed new routes. And the feedback that I'm hearing from the community, and I'm pretty tapped in with what's going on from the community, and it's been very positive. I think we're gonna get updates from staff to council on these issues as they roll out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're listening to drivers, and they're listening to riders. And how they went about gathering the feedback was really good, both in public open houses, surveys, and online surveys in person. And I think that's really, really good. We need to be able to prove to the community that we listened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of the issue.
Right.
And I really feel that this time we've listened, and we are continuing to listen. There's no off, we don't turn it off at some point. We will always continue to listen. But I really think that this new scheduling is and the new routes are going to be very good. Two of them that pop out to me, a spine route is so dearly needed, and then the perimeter route as well that goes around the city, absolutely needed.
Yeah, I was actually that was the thing that disappointed me when the consultants report came back. I think it was in 2010 they had a proposed spine, as you called it, route. I actually like that term for it, the spine route, rather than the main line.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm right in calling it that, but that's what I'm calling it.
That's good.
I think I'm gonna
take the spine north to
yeah. All right.
But that was one of the things that disappointed me that never came about when they changed the routes.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Because it seems like as much as the transit lockout last summer was unfortunate and inconvenienced a lot of people and was a pain for drivers and city staff and all that, it really seemed to be a breaking point now, doesn't it? Because there have been a lot of like incremental improvements, not just the rollout of the new schedules and the new maps and stuff, but the drivers now have their lunchroom here on campus. They're going to get their lunchroom downtown. Is that your feeling too?
Yeah, you know what? No one wanted that to happen. Did it make things happen though? It did. So, I wish that it had never gotten to that point, and mm-hmm. I don't ever want it to get to that point ever in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do feel that that the drivers, the union, and from the staff administrative side and from council, it's done. And we're moving on. No pun intended. I think the one thing that is important is that when a promise is made on something, it's you have to follow through on it. And
right.
You mentioned the lunchroom issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something is made like as a promise, that's gonna make it happen. Mm-hmm. It's gotta happen. And I think seeing that movement from the city side has shown some acts of good faith back to the union that that we men will be saying too.
Let's talk about something a bit more fun because this sort of got you some points early on. The issue with the skating rink in the South End.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah, classic.
Because yeah. You know it seemed like one of those things that. It just, you know, yeah, there's bylaws and stuff, but there's also just, you know, humanity. And for once, humanity won, because this was an issue that played out in a lot of different municipalities.
Yeah.
But you know, the solution seems so simple. Like, I don't know if you can recount from your end just how you handled that.
Well, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I forgot about that. You know, I found out about it by reading about it in the media. So that was and right away I was like, what's going on here? And I'm like, oh, this is not going to go good.
No.
And so getting back to I think one of your first questions about do you have power, right, as mayor? A lot of people were contacting me and saying, I can't believe you shut down a rink.
You personally shut down
the rink. Yeah, and so I'm like, yeah, I don't do that. I didn't –
red tape.
Yeah, I'm just pretty sure one of my campaign promises wasn't shut down community rinks, you know. So so when I found out about that and kind of gave my viewpoint to the issue and it did blow up like I had predicted, I immediately along with staff said we've got to find a compromise. And that just makes sense.
Right.
Find a compromise on this issue. I will say, though, that we do have rules in place for a reason at a city. And sometimes there are risk management issues like liability where that rink is considered a storm water management pond.
Mm-hmm.
And the city does have rules and regulations in place about asking permission for what's called encroachment. And, the community did not ask permission. They did not fill out the encroachment application. And
right.
So, yes, there was somebody who complained and that, you know, started the snowball of events that occurred on that. My viewpoint on any kind of issue is I'm more concerned always about trying to find the solution. Okay, so we can discuss how it happened later. But let's find the solution right now on this or a compromise, and that's exactly what occurred there. So I have actually no idea what's going to happen this coming winter on that skating rink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm obviously for it remaining a skating rink, but the compromise for this past season was good all the way around for both. I think the people that complained and for the hundreds of kids that were having a ball out there every day.
Yeah, I'm all for, you know, kids doing active things.
And, yeah.
That's
can we still toboggan? Is that going to be okay?
That's a good question. We talked about it on the show.
No,
yeah.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Banned. You heard it here first,
you can skate,
people.
But you can't toboggan.
Oh, yeah. That was the compromise.
Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah, of course you can. See you on Mull Hill.
Yeah, right on. Yeah.
But before we go to break, let me just ask you this thing. If you, with your experience, you know, 6 months of experience now as mayor, were to go back in time to give yourself, who was on the campaign trail at the time, a piece of advice in terms of what to expect or how to moderate your expectations in becoming mayor, what do you think that would be?
I think the biggest issue that I would have wished I would have handled differently when I walked into the mayor's office would have been trying to get a handle or get briefed
mm-hmm.
on sort of the major issues in a better way. I found to be finding myself for the first couple months, only the first couple months, more reactive on trying to find out some of the issues that have been going on than proactive. And so I think the advice I would give myself if I was, you know, the rookie mayor walking in again differently would be to have maybe a little bit of a better plan of figuring out exactly what you're walking into in a more proactive way than reactive.
even saying that, though, I mean, you were at city council for 4 years, you know, watching the mayor work. You know, how much of that was how much of it was one voice in your head saying, like, I've seen her work, and, you know, I think I know how I can work it out for myself, and how much of it was like, I didn't realize how much work there was.
No, it wasn't an issue of that. Just it's important to remember that counselors are considered part time.
Right.
And counselors, on the most part, they are never at City Hall ever unless there's a meeting at City Hall.
Right.
The mayor's there full time, mm-hmm. like full time. I'm there every day, and I'm sure Karen was too. The thing is that you just have a completely different focus and perspective on the issues that are happening because you're there all day long, and so that's the part that sort of hit me is you get to understand the relationships and the nuances with the staff,
right,
that you only had interaction from sitting out of council chambers to now interacting within the hall. You get a more in-depth focus and look at the issues from being able to, you know, again, interact with staff and people in the hallway that have the answers right away because you're there full time, than to be there as considered part time or only there just for meetings at night as a city councilor. So it's that perspective that is overwhelming. I don't mean that in a victim way, but overwhelming because you finally realize that, hey, I can get answers pretty quick because they're across the hall from me, and I can walk across the hall instead of having to wait a while to get them.
Well, I think all that makes sense. I think we're doing well so far.
Absolutely.
So we're going to throw it to break right now. Then we're going to come back with your questions that you gave us on social media. And that hashtag is AskMayorCam. So if you want to hit me or Scotty or even the mayor himself on Twitter,
sure,
and give us your questions, we'll see if we can fit you in. But for now, we are going to go to break. We're going to play a couple of PSAs, have a little bit of a musical interlude, and we will be right back with your questions here on Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, your community station.
And that was Mayor Mick C.A. from his 2001 release, Me Is He. And that was his campaign song, the Mick campaign song. So,
did he win?
I don't know, but he might now that we've played his song. It's 2001,
he got,
so yeah.
He got the open sources
vintage mayoral
in
stuff.
In 2001.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so now we're going to open it up to your questions. And thank you to everyone who did send us questions via Twitter, via Facebook, via Reddit, and via email. They were greatly appreciated. And there's some really good questions here, so I'm really excited to get to it. The first one comes from Chuck Castillo, who sent me an email. And it's kind of lengthy, but it's also a two-part question, so we'll take it two at a time. First of all, he says, I have an elevator pitch followed by a preamble followed by a question. But it's not preambly, but it is a preamble. Anyway, he says, his mother starts commuting to work by bike. Her health improves. Everyone saves money. When the $300,000 active transportation budget item was proposed to be cut this year, citizens came out in force to ask if it be reinstated. The result was a doubling of this in the budget to $600,000. So the mayor is asking you, you've been on record stating that while you aren't interested in removing existing bike lanes, has this experience caused you to reconsider the demand for building up a cycling network?
Okay, well, thanks for the question. So first of all, as a counselor, I was trying to get those separated, mm-hmm. I underlined that word, separated bike lanes and sidewalks on Woodlawn Road. As a council, now as mayor, I was actually quite happy, and I voted for the $600,000 to be put in the capital budget, so that the sidewalks and separated bike lanes could be built on Woodlawn Road. And frankly, in my opinion, the reason why I wanted to do that, and I think other councillors would echo it, is because it's a risk issue. Mm-hmm. If you and I live in that area, so if there are people that are riding their bicycles on Woodlawn Road and it is not safe.
I would agree with that. Yes.
And there are dirt trails on the side where people have walked for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And then from a transit perspective, the buses are letting people off literally in mud piles on the street. It's not safe. And so anyways, yeah, council passed almost unanimously on that one to not just fund the $300,000, but to give the $600,000 to get it going this year. Let's stop talking about this. Let's get it done. And I think the community has been pretty happy about that. I do like the fact, though, to get to his question about the separated bike lanes.
Right.
So this continues to have traffic flow in the city, but also gives people who are using active transportation that way of still getting around the city. And that's the type of methodology that I like, where it fits, then that's great. If it has to be bike lanes on a road and it fits for that reason, I'm fine with that too. But this way, if they're both off the road and it doesn't impact on traffic flow.
Second question, same category, just slightly south. The new plaza at Wellington Gordon is, he says, I think fully occupied and businesses are open. And I think that it is nearly occupied.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But he says the parking lot is painted, but the adjacent sidewalks and bike lanes are still in deplorable shape. Do you plan on doing anything to make sure that the city prioritizes walking and cycling as much as it prioritizes parking in new development?
So in regards to that specific location, I will have to – I'm not dodging this question. Please
right.
believe me. I'll have to check to find out what's going on with the sidewalks and the bike lanes around that area. I do know that there's a lot of construction still going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that there was some barrels buried
just down
Wellington,
the road.
And that put the project behind a little bit for environmental reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously to me, an area of development like that is not yet complete until it's actually complete, which
right.
means the sidewalks are in and the bike lanes are marked properly. I will follow up on that if he wants to try to get in touch with me. Mayor@Guelph.ca or on Twitter @CamGuthrie. I am more than happy to follow up if he's listening right now. And so obviously when any new developments come forward, to get to his question, yes, I do, you know, in my own little check boxes, think about, okay, there's new developments coming in, not just about roads or parking lots, but do we have the sidewalks? Do we have the bike lanes? Do we have even parking for bicycles just as much as for cars? I mean, that's part of my own filtered process when I'm thinking about developments as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So my first question was asked in person, the old-fashioned way. So it's from Tony P. And he started off kind of short. I had to kind of tease it out of him. He said to ask the mayor, what's with all the development? And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said that, you know, even in the event of, we'll call it a neighborhood outcry, like, say, St. Matthews in the South
sure.
End, Solstice Development.
Sure.
And there have been lots of others. I've been at some of those meetings. It seems that the default is that it just sort of gets built. The OMB says, okay, this is going to happen, and there's very little control. At least the perception is there's very little control at City Hall. So would you agree with that to some degree? I guess his main was what's your perspective of that, and then up to and including the OMB and your opinion on it?
So I would suggest that there's a process. And in fact, Guelph does a very good job of following the process and making sure that we have community engagement on anything and even development. And so we We always take that into consideration, and we weigh it very heavily, actually. All of council does. And but at a certain point, where when we either approve or not approve something, the process is still in place under the Planning Act, which is from the province, mm-hmm. to allow a developer to take something to the OMB, or to allow a stakeholder or another party or even an individual who was a part of the process to take something to the OMB. And that happens in
like
town.
Like the Walmart example.
Sure, Walmart.
Right, 12 years, was that? Yeah.
I think 10 years or something.
Yeah,
so,
it was
yeah,
a long time.
And so like, it can go either way. The OMB process is there for a reason, but they become the ultimate decision body. It's taken out of the council's decision authority or the authority that we have, and they are the final decision maker. And unfortunately, we have to or fortunately, it can go either way. We have to agree to whatever the OMB says. That is why I am consistently saying, please get together and compromise. If you need another meeting, have it. If you need another two meetings, have it. If you want me at the meeting to try to help, have me there. We don't want to go to the OMB. It costs us money. It costs us a lot of time. And guess what? It's going to cost you money too. It costs both sides of the party a lot of money and a lot of time. We should always be trying to do the best that we can to settle things before it has to go to any of these other decision bodies that take it out of the local control.
And at this point, no matter what side you're on, nobody wants to go to the OMB.
No.
Yeah.
No. And no, not at all.
Barzin 404 wanted to, and this is the way he or she phrased it, ask him outright what he would like to see happen with the Bailey Bridge on Niska Road.
I have no idea right now. We are still awaiting the environmental assessment, and I will allow our professional staff, other stakeholders that are involved, which includes the community, to voice their opinions after a report is made before I come to any decision. That's just a proper answer to say.
Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, this has to do with the traffic
yep.
on the bridge and
yep.
yeah, one lane bridge. So.
Yeah, speaking of traffic, I have a related question,
and
it's a bit more general in terms of this is from Darren, and he said, and I've kind of removed the expletives because he was very adamant about this, but I'll shorten it to, why are there so many traffic bottlenecks in town? Now, I can't remember what night it was and the storm we're supposed to be on, but instead City Council was on, and I caught a couple of minutes of it, and you had mentioned just sort of, it seemed off the cuff that about putting a roundabout in somewhere. Are you pro roundabout? This is something we may have in common because I personally love them. I don't know if that would help Darren with this problem, but in terms of flow, they're excellent. But that's actually not Darren's question. That was a bit of an aside. So
yes.
Why do you reckon there are so many traffic bottlenecks in town, according to Darren?
So number one, yes, I'm in favor of roundabouts. So that's
right
on. Get that one going. And number two, to get to his question, whenever developments are taking place, there are always traffic studies that are done. And sometimes not just once, but two or three times. And they're usually done by independent third-party people. So there's no sort of bias coming from any of these reports. And so they determine whether or not an arterial road or a collector road or a residential road can handle whatever maybe development is being proposed or is there. So far, everything that has come forward has said these things can be handled, whatever is defining these things, this new development or whatever can handle this.
Right.
The problem that I have personally is that as much as these reports are data-driven and they are factual – and they do help in making an informed decision. The reality, the real world of driving around the city, I too experience these bottleneck issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say most of it is prevalent in the south end of Guelph. And most of it, I find, Gordon Street, especially with all the developments going down Gordon.
Right.
So I can tell you it's not just me that is asking these types of tough questions. There are many councillors. And not even councillors that represent those wards that I was just discussing that are actually concerned about making sure that, especially as new developments come on, that we are making sure that we still have traffic flow, as a priority in the city.
Well, this next question has a bit of buckshot in it, but I think that was an intended. GoKite says, ask him after all 7 hours of compromise and the council working together why he decided to vote down the budget that he helped to inflate.
So I walked into that budget with ways of getting the budget lower. I did vote in favor of the capital portion of the budget. But when it came time at the final number, it was over the rate of inflation. In fact, it was well over the rate of inflation. And I made a promise that I would not vote for something that was over the rate of inflation. And so I fulfilled my promise.
I'd just like to follow up because Yellow Edge wanted to know if you think individual councillors should feel compelled to support the mayor's campaign promises, especially the tax hikes, the less than inflation promise, or if they have a higher duty to keep their own promises and vote according to the principles they were elected for.
Well, the councillors that vote for or against, and just as the mayor who has to vote for or against anything, so not just a budget, they have to be the ones to be accountable and back to the residents in 4 years to tell them why they did or did not vote for things.
Fair enough.
I have one regarding trash, which is everybody's favorite topic, right? So this one is from Gemma, and it was, should the auditor's report come down that trash collection is equally costed between private and public, or public is less, say, will the drive still be on to privatize it?
No, I have said this like so many times, so I'm glad I have an opportunity to say it again. My job, I feel, is to... I feel that we have a duty to the taxpayers to explore these options. And then that way we know. We know the answer. And I will be the first person to hit the no button. I feel like a broken record on this one, but I will hit the no button if it does not make sense to do it. But at least then I can look at the community and say, we checked for you. At least we checked.
Do you have a no button?
Yes, we have a no button and a yes button, and we have a button that says cough on it. So when you want to cough, you press the cough button.
Love it.
Yeah, there is no maybe button.
Fishing is Water wants to follow up on that. She asks, first of all, she says, thank you for being on council when the new bin system was introduced for garbage pickup, and she would like to know if we've tried showing and selling the system and service to other communities as it has improved efficiency, one driver, and improved aesthetics, no bags, and that kind of thing. So she wants to know if there are other ways to leverage the success of our bin pickup system.
So to get to the first part of her question about showcasing it to other communities, there were amount of other communities well before us that have had it.
Right.
I hope I'm saying this right, but I believe there are – I think it's something like 75 million of those bins across North America that other – you know, including us communities are using. And you're whoever wrote that, I'm sorry.
Fishing is Water.
Oh, okay. Well, that person. They are right that it was planned to show a savings. We were told from staff, I believe it was around $400,000 to $440,000 a year in operational savings by going to the new trucks with the claw that comes up and grabs the bins. So... So I don't think it's really us trying to showcase it to other people. I think, you know, we saw other people doing it. And although, little sidebar, it really was the province who governs waste through their C of A they really did say to Guelph that you had to use green bins because of the old issues with the wet dry plant.
That's right.
And so staff thought, properly so, that if we're being asked to go on the green bins, we might as well look to change the whole system over to bins for the gray and the blue. And that's kind of what started that to happen.
Right.
So nothing excites people more than trash than parking. So this question is from Hyper 2013, and it is, ask him if there will be more parking downtown and when more commercial development will be coming to the East End. I guess that's not completely about parking, but it focuses on that. Will it be more if Baker Street could be turned into a parking garage or Wilson Street, since parking is hard to come by?
Okay, I'll attack the parking downtown issue first. You guys remind me about East End commercial stuff.
All right.
So thank you for the question. We are expecting in the next few months what is called the Parking Master Plan. Mm-hmm. And it will be a document that I have not seen at all yet. Staff are still finishing it off. And that will be coming to us, and it will lay out a plan for the downtown parking. She did mention two things. She mentioned Wilson Street. There was a plan to actually build a parkade on Wilson Street several years ago. Mm-hmm. But I believe that was during when the recession hit in 2008, 2009. And then council at the time decided to take that off the capital list because of financial constraints. In regards to Baker Street, Baker Street is actually being proposed to be a complete redevelopment of that whole site, but it will include parking. And actually, a proposed idea is to do two or three levels of underground parking there, making the parking jump to potentially 400 to maybe even 600 spaces.
Wow.
The East End commercial, I reminded myself. This is stuff that you don't see in the paper, or maybe I don't tweet about, and things that people know about.
Right.
But I can very clearly state right now, I have been working on that issue a lot since becoming the mayor. I am in favor of economic development as a whole, but I recognize that the East End is a desert out there when it comes to a commercial. And I have had a couple of meetings already, not only with staff, but with potential investors. And I think that they are going very well. And that's all I can say on that right now.
And there's a perception that if somebody doesn't see something in the newspaper for a while, there's that you're sitting on your hands, or the Ward 1 councilors
are
sitting on
your
hands. Oh, yeah.
That is so very not true.
Testate wants to know, with the recent unanimous Supreme Court ruling which laid guidelines for religion, how will you ensure that your religious views are not imposed upon the Guelph public nor affect your decisions during your tenure as mayor?
Well, I am a Christian. I believe I'm a follower of Christ. I have absolutely no problem in saying that out loud. But I also believe in the separation of church and state.
I think that's all Testate wanted to know.
There you have it. And we actually have one more from Fishing is Water. When you were on CFRU at the end of 2014, slightly after the election, you said we need to bring more detached housing in Guelph because we don't want to lose out bringing the good people, this is in quotes, to Guelph. Could he please describe what he means by good people?
Wow, that's... I'm pausing there because if I did say that, that's really wrong. I shouldn't have said that. It doesn't sound like something I would have said, but I mean, if that is a quote, then actually I apologize because that's just wrong. I shouldn't have said that. Well, but maybe can I just talk about detached homes for a second?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Go right ahead.
Yeah, sure. I do believe that actually we should be careful in how we are building, we should have a good mix of choice. So I'm not trying to say that we can't have anything that we currently have,
right.
But I do think we need to be careful that a lot of dreams of a lot of people are wanting to you know have a family and have a backyard with the ball to throw the ball around with the kid or whatever, right? And in those detached homes and we have, I think, a very low supply of that, and the demand is so high that it's pushing up the prices of a lot of the existing stock that we have in detached homes. And I just don't want to see that issue get bigger. And so I think the reason why it's happening is the Places to Grow Act, which is telling us that we have to accept more people in the city of Guelph, which we want, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Even good people, by the way.
All the people.
Yeah. So we have to do accept those people in through the boundaries that we have, right? But it's halfway through the Places to Grow Act, and actually right now Right now, the province sent a letter through to the mayor's office saying, or to every municipality, but I got it in here, and they are looking for the city to give feedback on how has it been for those first few years. Is it working? Is it not? Give us feedback on what your plans are. Can we amend something? And so they're accepting feedback from all municipalities, and so our staff is doing that too. And I, so I have no idea what our staff's position is on it. My personal feeling is that we just need to be careful that we're not losing that supply and demand issue when it comes to detached homes.
It's surprising to hear that because, you know, you drive around town, you see homes being built just about in every corner of Guelph that, you know, maybe we don't have enough supply to meet demand.
You know what? We actually have a lot of room and a lot of stock that we can do a lot of building on.
Right.
And we are healthy that way. We're very healthy that way. We are expecting about 50,000 more people by 2031. So wow. we have to get ready for those people.
Which is 16 years away now.
I know. So that's why I mentioned just earlier that we're halfway through this, the Places to Grow Act, and the province is doing a good job by asking municipalities, say, hey, how are we doing on this? Is it working for you? Is it working for us? And for all I know, they may say, well, everything's status quo. That's the way it's going to be. Or maybe they might come back and say, hey, we can amend this a little bit.
Well, before we close out, I wanted to give you a chance to nerd out because I know you have an inner nerd. Are you too busy to keep up with the Star Wars stuff? Did you see the new trailer?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. And I think they picked the right director, too. I'm pretty happy about it. As maybe not everyone knows, but my son's name is Anakin.
That's right.
Yeah, so I can pretty much bet I'll be standing in line maybe at the midnight showing, at least with the family to try to see it.
Well, if you didn't get your question into the mayor today, that's where you can find him on December 18th, waiting in line for Star Wars. Yeah.
So, we might be there too. You never know.
We might. Yeah. Anyway.
Have a party.
Thank you to the mayor.
Special Star Wars showing at City Hall.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah.
I'll put it in the budget.
Awesome.
But you bring your own popcorn.
Yeah, that's right.
So we want to thank the mayor for coming in and for joining us. And thank you to all of you again who submitted questions and taking part in our little mini town hall here. And so before we depart for this week, let me just say you can stay connected with us here at Open Sources. Our website is opensourcesguelph.com. We have a Facebook page that you can find at Open Sources Newswire, and feel free to post questions and requests and comments because we always love to hear from you. You can find me at Adam A. Donaldson at Twitter, and you can also visit guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And Scotty, where can
people? I'm at Scotty Hertz on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, also Scotty Hertz. Not also Scotty Hertz, just Scotty Hertz. And I blog on occasion at a place called The Spanner Book. Just put it in the Google, you'll find it. So, and
Mayor Guthrie, where can people connect with you?
Sure. Formally, you can go mayor at guelph.ca. But Twitter is at Cam Guthrie. I do have a blog as well. It's mayorguthrie.com. And a Facebook page is there as well. I think it's Mayor Cam Guthrie. Yeah, and happy to connect with anybody there and help them out.
Well, thank you again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yep.
And
we should do it again sometime.
We should do it again. We got three and a half more years, so we'll do it again.
Yep.
400 days.
Yeah.
Who's counting?
Anyway, Open Sources will be back here next Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Thursday.
What?
Thursday.
Is it not Tuesday?
I heard Tuesday. Yeah, it's one of those weeks, eh?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about the snow, Mayor Guthrie? No, I don't.
Thursday at 5 p.m. We will be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. Stay tuned right now for Sounds Good to Me with Stacey here at the top of the hour. Now get up to date with the BBC. See you next time, guys.